Blu-ray or to rent.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lori. Coming up today, we're going to listen back to the debate that WTVT Television did with the four Democratic candidates for governor. We're going to hear from former Congresswoman Gwen Graham, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, Miami Beach, former Miami Beach Mayor Phil Levine, and Orlando area businessman Chris King. Craig Patrick is the host of this debate. He's answering the questions. And as we listen back to this debate, we want to get your take on it. Our email address here in the studio is dj@wmnf.org. So let's listen to the first debate of this election season, the four Democratic candidates for governor.
Take it away.
Yeah, we're ready to go. And the candidates drew numbers to determine the order of the questions. And Mr. Levine drew the first question. Mr. Levine, this one is on property taxes. Republican leadership is pushing an amendment to cut our property taxes. If passed, it would expand the homestead exemption to $75,000. This is something that Ms. Graham has expressed concerns about. It's something that Mayor Gillum has opposed. Mr. King has opposed. You are the only candidate in this room who supports this. So tell us why you think Speaker Corcoran is right and your fellow Democrats are wrong.
Craig, let me start off and say this. Thank you for the opportunity to be here tonight and today. Number one, I would just like to say for all of us, I'm sure I speak for all of us, that my deepest condolences to the Bush family on the loss of Barbara Bush, this great American. Number two, we know that there's a major blackout in Puerto Rico right now and people are suffering down there, so our thoughts and prayers are with them. On a lighter note, I hope the Tampa Bay Lightning wins tonight. That's what I'd like to say right off the bat. I could tell you this. It's not about raising taxes, Craig. Let me tell you what it's about. It's about actually stopping corporate loopholes. It's about making sure that we collect fair taxes from everybody across the state of Florida. I believe that what's most important is that we raise revenue, we grow our entire economy. If we grow our economy, Craig, we're going to be able to do all the things we want to do going forward.
Mr. King?
Craig, I disagree with Mayor Levine on this issue. I believe that passing the homestead extension would gut local communities. Experts tell us it might remove $600 million from local communities across the state. I don't believe a Democratic governor should be supporting it. But, you know, I also have to say today in Puerto Rico, we have had a massive power outage affecting the whole island. And I would say to the President of the United States and the Governor of Florida, Mr. President, it is time to send the National Guard in a more energetic way to the island of Puerto Rico and finally address.
Stay on topic, Mayor Gillum.
Well, I'll tell you, as a mayor myself, and considering what's going on in Puerto Rico, we know that the public infrastructure and the dollars that are created at the local level are critical to ensuring that we've got a good grid system, we have a good educational system, we've got good roads, good public infrastructure. As a mayor, I know that those are essential to the quality of life experience that people want here in the state of Florida, and it takes resources in order to make it happen. We have heard the idea of trickle-down economics. It does not work. We all have to pay our fair share in order to keep our community safe and going.
Ms. Graham.
After 20 years of Republican rule in Tallahassee, our schools are underfunded, our teachers are underpaid, our environment is unprotected, and our economy is out of balance. And your question goes right to that issue, Craig. The special interests have control over Tallahassee. When I'm governor, I'm going to make sure that it's the people of Florida whose voices are heard, that it's the people of Florida that I'm working hard to protect. And one of those ways is to make sure that the resources that are needed in local communities are there so that we can fund our schools, so we can protect our environment, so we can have an economy that's working for all. These are all critical issues, and making sure that we protect that property tax is important to achieving them.
Next question goes to Mr. King. It's on the minimum wage, because you are all calling for a higher minimum wage, specifically a $15 an hour, except for Mr. Levine, who said that he would settle for $12 an hour. But a CBO analysis found that raising it just to $10.10 an hour could cost up to 500,000 jobs all across the nation, and that was a couple of years ago. So why do you draw the line at 15 when the cost of living can vary so much from city to city in Florida, as Mr. Levine has pointed out?
Well, Craig, I'm an entrepreneur. I started a small business from scratch. that serves seniors and working families all across the state of Florida with safe, clean, quality, affordable housing. But I recognized early in the creation of that business that it had to reflect my progressive values. We pay a living wage, and Craig, $15 is the base wage in our company. We also provide full health care services. So yes, I'm in favor of raising it towards $15 an hour. But this minimum wage politics, we have to do more than that. We have to address the affordable housing crisis in this state. We have to provide health care to the 2.5 million Floridians that don't have it today. And we've got to take on an economy that is not fair for the people of Florida.
Mayor Gillum.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Miami-Dade, Florida, in a neighborhood called Richmond Heights. To my mother, who was a school bus driver, and my daddy, who was a construction worker. I'm number 5 of 7 kids and the first of the 7 to graduate from high school and the first to graduate from college. My family knows what it means to see intergenerational poverty interrupted at the hands of a good public education, but also at the hands of a good job. I watched my parents trade between which bills they could pay before something got cut off. 46% of the people in this state say that they cannot make ends meet at the end of the month. And what we need is a governor who is intent on building an economy that works for all of the people of the state of Florida.
Ms. Graham?
There was a study done recently in Florida that showed that almost 50% of Floridians are living one paycheck away from bankruptcy. One paycheck away from bankruptcy. We must want better for the people of Florida, all across the state, a quality of life. So I am committed to sitting down with all the stakeholders. It's what I've done my whole life professionally. Bring people together. It's why I ran for Congress in the first place, because I have proven that I have the ability to bring people together, even people who don't agree with each other all the time. Talk through the issues. We will walk out of that room with a decision about how do we raise the minimum wage in the best interest of Floridians.
Mr. Levine, your perspective is different from the rest.
Craig, it's very different because I'm actually the only buddy up here who's actually raised a minimum living wage. As the mayor of Miami Beach, we took the bold step to do the right thing. We raised the minimum living wage. We brought it up to $13.31. What we realize is this: what it costs to buy a hamburger in Miami Beach is more than what it costs to buy it in Pensacola. If I'm honored to be governor, I'll make sure we raise it up. And that could be 13, it could be 14, it could be 15. But what we're definitely going to do, Craig, is listen to the local communities. Let them adjust their living wage, because that's what the referendum said in 2004, which Tallahassee has not listened to. So I've actually done it.
Next question to Mayor Gillum. It's on gun policy. You've all talked about banning assault weapons in some form or fashion. Well, Congress tried that years ago and found that the gun makers could easily work around the legal definition by making minor cosmetic changes to the weapons. The alternative would be to ban all semi-automatic weapons, which would ban most handguns and hunting rifles on the market. So specifically, tell me what your definition is of an assault weapon and how such a ban would not be worked around as it was years ago.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, any gun that can fire off 45 rounds of artillery in less than 60 seconds and snuff out the lives of 20 kids or 49 adults or 17 individuals is a gun that I believe is a weapon of war and does not belong on our city streets. If you want to fire a weapon of war, you should join the military. Outside of that, we ought to close loopholes in this state, make sure folks with mental incapacitation are not getting access to deadly weapons. I've fought this fight with the NRA, who sued me for our refusal to repeal an ordinance that simply said you cannot shoot guns in a city park. We've got to get back to a more commonsensical place on gun laws where we can make sure we keep our communities, our kids, our neighborhoods, our cities, and our states safe away from the kind of gun violence that is ravaging not only our schools, but also our city streets.
If I follow that correctly, he's defining assault weapon based on time between shots. Ms. Graham, what's your definition?
AR-15s and all variants. I am the one person on this stage. I have the strongest record on gun safety. I sat on the floor of the House of Representatives with John Lewis. I stood up with the Democrats in Orange County after Pulse occurred. I went to Stoneman Douglas after the tragedy that occurred on February 14th. I am the first candidate to get the Moms Demand Action Gun Sense Award on the stage. And I'm going to fight. I will tell you, this is about the students. It is about their movement. It's about their commitment to bringing safety to our communities, and I will fight with them to make it happen.
Mr. Levine, your specific definition of assault weapon?
My definition of assault rifle would be very similar to what Mayor Gillum said. Something that fires off 35, 40, 50 rounds. Craig, the bottom line is this. In my city, Miami Beach, we passed a non-binding resolution outlawing assault rifles, I think about 2 years ago. We led a march and a rally in Tallahassee with parents and students that we sponsored and brought in. I think that we all agree that we need to eliminate assault rifles. We also need to make sure we have better background checks. We need to make sure, unquestionably, folks with mental health issues can't buy weapons in Florida. Hey, it's not about the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner, and I have a concealed weapons permit. But we don't want to have the weakest gun laws in the nation. We want the safest.
We may have just found another separator, because Mr. King, you said your definition, if I understand correctly, is all semi-automatic rifles, correct?
Craig, I believe we have a framework to address this issue. We had a federal assault weapons ban in 1993 and 1994 that was passed. It wasn't perfect. There were certainly loopholes in that that we've got to address, but perfect cannot be the enemy of the good. But I also have to say, Congresswoman Graham said she has the strongest record on guns. You know, in my community, we lost 49 people at the Pulse nightclub, and during her time in Congress, she never supported an assault weapons ban. I will be a governor that will bring this to the ballot in 2020.
Next question goes to Ms. Graham. It's on the issue of Syria. You are the granddaughter of a Syrian refugee and have said you would not be here if our nation had shut its doors when he was fleeing violence. But 3 years ago, you also voted in Congress to restrict the flow of Syrian refugees into this country. Is that a vote you now regret? And if you become governor, would you fully cooperate with federal relocation efforts to bring more Syrian refugees to Florida? And is there a cap in terms of how many you'd be willing to accept?
Well, first, let me respond to Chris, because he's just absolutely wrong. I am committed to getting assault weapons off our streets. We should not have weapons of war on our streets. I was the first candidate on the stage to get the gun sense recognition from Moms Demand Action, and I'm the only candidate on the stage where the NRA spent $300,000 to try to beat me. I went to Orlando, I went to Pulse, and I spoke to the community after, and I talked about right then, 2 weeks after Pulse, I talked about banning weapons of war. So he is just wrong in his statement that he just made. But let me get back to my roots as a granddaughter of a Syrian Lebanese American. Absolutely. I voted, that vote was not a vote to deny access to the United States. It was a vote that would only have certified the process that was in place. And I would argue that that process would be far better than what we have today, which is we've only allowed 11 Syrians into this country in the last year.
And you would not have a cap?
No cap. No cap.
Mr. Levine?
Craig, the great American experience, the American dream, is about immigration. It's about people coming to our country to live their dreams. And I don't think we should in any way decide who should come to our country based on their religion, their race, or their creed. I think that we should have good, solid, sensible federal immigration law, and it doesn't make a difference if you're from Syria, or you're from Israel, or you're from Europe or South America, wherever it may be. That's my belief, and my belief is that I would move forward and agree with whatever the right immigration standards would be and the amounts. I'm not an expert in the amounts, but I know one thing. It should not be based on religion or background.
Mr. King.
You know, this is why I'm running, because conventional politicians tell you one thing, but their records tell you another. You know, that vote that Congresswoman Graham took made it harder for Syrian refugees to come to this country, and that's why there weren't many Democrats that supported that vote. On the very day that Congress took that vote, I wrote an article that was published in the Orlando Sentinel where I talked about the fact that this is where leaders, progressive leaders, have to stand up for our values, because we've got one of the worst refugee crises in history and we've got to respond to it.
I'm going to give Ms. Graham an opportunity to respond in a moment. First, Mayor Gillum.
Well, I have to tell you, it's one of the places where the Congresswoman and I disagreed on the public policy implications there. That was a vote that the President of the United States asked Democrats to hold with him, to seek our highest values as a nation, to be consistent with who we are, not fear-mongering, but to tell the American people that in times of crisis around the globe, that's what we've been, a refuge. And so while, as I understand the positions of others, as the mayor of the city of Tallahassee, I'm the only mayor that stood up and said, come to the city of Tallahassee, we will welcome you. We understand that you're fleeing great danger, great harm, great loss of life. We want to make sure that you're safe through this crisis, and I invited them into our city.
Ms. Graham, up to 30 seconds to respond.
Chris, I don't mean to be picking on you, but you're just wrong. More Democrats voted for that bill than any other vote. It was a veto-proof majority. And again, it was not about not allowing Syrian refugees to come into the country. It was certifying the Obama process for immigration that was already in place. And I would argue that it would be far better to have that process codified in law today than where we are today with Donald J. Trump.
Next question. It's on education funding. You all say we're underfunding education. A three-part question to you first, Mr. Levine. Tell me how much the state is currently spending in its 2018-2019 budget on K through 12 schools, how much you think the state should be spending in that budget, and how you would shift the allocations around.
Craig, I do living rooms all over the state, and I've met with teachers everywhere I've gone to, and they tell me the same thing. That they're underfunded, they're underappreciated. I had a teacher in the Sarasota area tell me the other day that besides more resources, what they need is they want love and they want respect. And I think that's something that the state of Florida, we should give them. We know right now we're ranked about 45th. Our teachers are being paid $9,000 less than national average. That's no way for us to treat our children. It's no way for us to grow our economy. As somebody that went to public school my whole life, I had a teacher by the name of Mr. Wilson who taught me American history, taught me how to read Time magazine. He got me excited into politics and history and understanding how important our country is to all of us and understanding the history of our nation. I know that education is the top three expense of our entire state, but I believe that we can never spend enough if we would like to create the economy and the opportunity for everybody.
An awareness question. What is the budget currently for K through 12 schools 2018?
Well, I know that our budget is about $89 billion, close to it, and I know that that's one of our top numbers right there, Craig.
Give me your best guess. How much are we spending on K through 12 schools?
I know
schools?
It's right in the billions, Craig, okay? And I can tell you that.
Can you narrow that down for me? Give me.
I think it's in the multi-billions, Craig, and there's no question that we absolutely need to spend more going forward.
What number should it be?
I think it should be the highest number we possibly can do. But we're only going to get there, Craig, by actually growing our economy, by investing in our schools. And we're going to grow our economy, which I think I'm uniquely qualified to do, starting from nothing and building businesses. It's by investing in education, investing in healthcare, and making sure that we have the right environmental policy, making sure we have the right public transportation. We're not going to get to where we want to get to unless we make sure we have the right graduates, and we have the right school system going forward.
Mr. King, he did not know how much the state is spending in the 2018-2019 budget on K through 12 education. What's the answer?
Craig, my approximate understanding, this budget is about an $87, $88 billion budget. I believe we spend between $21 and $22 billion on public education. But the premise, I think, of your question, I would answer a little bit differently. When you say, how much do we need to spend? I would say we need to spend the amount of money it takes to honor our commitment to our public schools. 90% of our students in Florida are in public schools, in public education. 90% of the conversation in Tallahassee has been about everything but public schools. I want to be a champion for public schools.
And do you have a number in mind, what it should be?
Again, it is whatever it needs to be to honor our commitment. What I would say, Craig, is that for the last two decades, we have watched leaders in Tallahassee from the Republican Party use every opportunity to remove resources from our public schools. I have children in public school. This is personal to me. This is where I met the love of my life in high school at a public school. We can do better. Teachers are demanding we do better, and we need a governor who is willing to fight for that.
Mayor Gillum. He said $21 billion currently spending, did not give a number specifically how much should be spent. What are your numbers?
Well, let me begin by saying, if it were not for teachers like Linda Aubrey from Gainesville High School, who poured into me, who pushed me, who told me I could when I didn't think I could, when I had reached my limits, who frankly make it possible for me to be here on this stage as a candidate for governor of the great state of Florida. I am the only candidate who has proposed a way to actually add revenue, add resources to our education spending. We have proposed a $1 billion increase into public spending in our public education system to, one, make sure that we hire teachers at the $50,000 salary level, starting salary. Two, that we reinvest in our school infrastructure. Third, that we make sure that we bring vo-tech education back into our public education system here in the state. We're in the 20 to 22 range at the state, but then at the local level, which is where a lion's share of the funding for education comes from our school board districts, and that varies throughout the 67 counties of the state.
Best guess, what are we spending K through 12 schools in the 2018-2019
and the $22 billion range at the state.
Do you have a number of what it should be?
Well, as I said, we're going to begin by adding another $1 billion to public education.
Craig?
Ms. Graham.
Let me guess what you're going to ask me. Let me tell you, we are funding our public school education 15% less than we used to. and it is way underfunded. And let me tell you, as a PTA mom and as a former public school official, this is going to be my number one priority. And there is no magic number. You're not going to get a magic number, because what it's going to take is for the governor, and I'm going to sit down with all of the school districts from across the state, say, what do you need? What are you getting currently? And where are the holes? Because whether a child starts in pre-K, goes through 12th grade, community college, higher education, this is the backbone of our economy, is our education. And we have got to start putting resources where we can help people in their lives and help them get that great paying job. And that's what I will do. So there is no magic number. It's whatever I determine after taking a look at the whole budget, $89 billion, there's going to be lots of ways. I will tell you one thing I'm going to do is make sure that the promise of the lottery dollars that was made to the people of Florida, that it was going to add money to public education.
And your time has expired, but in fairness, the number that we're currently spending in K through 12 schools, 2018-2019?
15% below what it needs to be currently.
Let's move on, a follow-up on education. Let's tackle it this way, Mr. Levine. Focus on civics education, because most of our schools have stopped teaching it more than 20 years ago. How would you assess the quality of civics education in Florida? Do you think we're doing better or worse than other states across the nation? And how would you score the current level of state support? Do you think the needle is moving in the right direction or the wrong direction with respect to that?
Craig, I think it's moving in the wrong direction. As I said before with Mr. Wilson, when I went to Hollywood Hills High in South Florida, in Broward County, it was one of my most important classes. It made a big impression on me. So I believe civics education is crucially important, and it's going the wrong direction. And what we have to do is we have to invest. I mean, what we need to start doing is kind of stop the testing and start investing. That's what we need to do with our schools in Florida. We need to make sure we have vocational programs in our school, that we have apprenticeship programs, that we make sure that people have the opportunity to earn a living. Because folks, may not all of them don't want to go to college. So if you're not going to college, you need to learn something else in high school. You need to have a plan. I believe strongly in civics. I believe that it was something for me that I enjoyed. It was something that I loved personally. And unfortunately, with this governor and this government in Tallahassee, they've gone all the wrong direction.
And better, worse, or about the same? Better, worse, or about the same? Worse than, okay. Mr. King.
Craig, I would say it's worse. You know, civics education at its base is about inspiring the next generation to serve. And, you know, what we've seen out of Parkland is that there is a next generation that is putting us on their shoulders and saying that we can do better. We have had great governors of the past that are a part of Florida's history, from Leroy Collins to Reuben Askew to Bob Graham and Lawton Childs, who made this state a great place to live. That's what we want to be teaching in our public schools.
Mayor Gillum, are we doing better or worse in civics education than other states?
I have to tell you, I can't limit this to civic education alone.
I'm limiting, this question is limited to civics education. We'll move on if you don't want to tackle that.
The quick answer would be that civic education obviously is not where it should be here in the state. But what's also not where it should be is we have a testing regime in this state, which doesn't tell us what our kids know, but how well they take a test. We've got to end that regime. We've got to make sure that we unleash the talent and the potentials of teachers to do the job that they were hired to do, which was to teach. And the best way that we can do that is by making sure that we open up the curriculum and the venues under which our kids can learn so they can be inspired again in the classroom.
Civics education, Ms. Graham, doing better or worse?
We must do better in civics education, and I appreciate this question. My father, Governor Bob Graham, is passionate about this as well. And we are living through a civics lesson today that it does matter who you elect into office. Donald J. Trump is the greatest civic lesson that any of us could have ever taken, that we need to get out to vote, we need to participate in our government, we need to be informed on the choices. And when I'm governor, I'm going to make sure that civics education is restored to our schools and that we teach how do you use your government to benefit your lives, because that's what government should be there for. It should be there for you as a Floridian.
Next question, Mr. King. We're going to stay on education. Common Core curriculum is based on setting fewer, higher standards, benchmarked to the best in the world. Do you support the Florida Core standards, which are derived from the Common Core standards? And if you all think we're over-testing our kids, specifically, which assessments would you phase out, and how many standardized tests should, say, a fourth or eighth grader take to effectively measure student achievement?
Absolutely. Craig, I believe we're moving in the right direction. The FSAs, in fact, my 11-year-old is taking his today. But I would agree, we have too much emphasis on testing. But to your question, you're asking me to suggest which test we should take, which test we should eliminate. That's part of the problem in Tallahassee and the conventional politics in Tallahassee. A small group of people who are completely removed from the classroom are dictating what we are doing in our public schools. And so teachers are telling us all across the state, you're not listening, you're not caring, you're not protecting, serving, and nurturing our students. I would be a governor who would listen. I would be a governor who would bring the best practices to testing.
Mayor Gillum.
Well, we've absolutely put the emphasis too much on testing and not enough on teaching. And under a Gillum administration, what we would advocate for is that we go back to a system that worked very well for this state for a long time. When I matriculated through the public system here in Florida, we had tests. We had them every week. It evaluated our growth. It evaluated what we were retaining. And then at the end of the 9 weeks, we got a benchmark about where we are. And then at the semester, we got a grade. And at the end of the year, we had a grade. And if we passed muster, we were elevated to the next level. If we didn't, we may have been retained. And all I'm saying is that we can have evaluations, but we don't need the cottage testing industry that right now runs roughshod over public education in this state.
Ms. Graham.
We have got to end this high-stakes standardized testing culture that's taken over our schools. It's hurting our kids. I spent the day with a young man at Carroll City Senior High, and at the end of the day, he came to me and he said, I'm not good at taking these tests. I feel like I've already been told by the state of Florida that I'm not going to be able to achieve my dreams. Shame on the state of Florida for putting this type of pressure on our kids. We have got to get back to allowing testing to be what the teachers use to develop education plans for their students. Let's put education back in the hands of our teachers. That's what I'm committed to doing.
Mr. Levine.
Craig, I think what I'm hearing here is all four of us. You have four great Democrats up here. I think we all believe the same thing. Stop the testing, start investing. And more importantly, stop investing in someone else's business. And that's the charter school industry. Take those dollars you're putting in someone else's business and those lobbyists and everyone else who's enjoying all the fat there and put it in our public school system. Let's make our public school system the best. And I agree with Mayor Gillum what he said. Listen, it's not about testing. It's about making sure you can move forward grade to grade and also learn about life skills. We used to have shop when I was in high school. What happened to these great programs to learn vocational skills?
Next question, Mayor Gillum, it's on the Medicaid expansion because President Trump wants to reel in the federal expansion of Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. That's going to make expanding it with federal dollars in Florida virtually impossible unless you do something to step toward compromise. Would you consider block granting Medicaid if it moved it through the legislature with an expansion or a per capita cap? Or would you consider work requirements for Medicaid if, as Gingrich and Clinton did in the 90s, it moves us toward a compromise and you get an expansion in the end?
Well, I don't want to concede the space on Medicaid expansion. We need to expand Medicaid for nearly a million of the sickest Floridians who need access to life-saving care. These are individuals who are right now accessing health care through the emergency rooms, which is the most inefficient and expensive form of care. We need to make sure that we expand Medicaid in this state, not only to make sure that those folks get access to health care, but we bring down the $6 billion that right now the federal government would have otherwise sent to the state of Florida that's not coming here because of an ideological difference, not in the best interest of the citizens of the state of Florida, but because there's a political difference between Obamacare and the governor and the legislature. And I think it's shameful. Having had to access teeth cleaning when the free Clinton would come through the neighborhood, I know what it means. And what I'm suggesting is we need a governor who understands that so that we can stand again on behalf of the regular working people of this state and expand Medicaid.
Thank you, Craig. My husband was just recently diagnosed with stage 4 prostate cancer. And we were able to get quality health care and we were able to get time off of work for him to get the chemotherapy that he needed. So absolutely, we must take Medicaid expansion. It is ideological and it's shameful that politics has stood in the front of doing what's right for the people of Florida in the current legislature. It's going to end when I'm governor. So yes, we'll take Medicaid expansion and I'm going to do what I call a public option, which is to allow Floridians to buy into the same health care coverage that our state legislators receive. That's what's right. It will drive down cost of health care and it will provide better coverage. And we're going to get it done for the people of Florida and I'm going to be working for you to get it done every single day.
Mr. Levine.
Health care should not be something for the privileged few. Health care should be a fundamental right for all Floridians and all Americans. And what the governor did by not accepting Medicaid expansion money was horrible. It was terrible. It was wrong to Floridians. If I'm honored to be governor, we will not only accept more Medicaid funding, I will ask for as much as we possibly can. I'll make trips to Washington because the one thing I want to make sure of is that all Floridians have health insurance. And that those can afford it, we must make sure it's affordable going forward.
Would you consider a work requirement if it expanded it?
I believe that what we should do is make sure everybody has health insurance. And that's what we're going to do with the Levine administration.
Mr. King.
Craig, this is another example of how the political establishment in Tallahassee has failed the people of Florida. You know, it was so important to me as I was building my business that every employee had access to health care, because people should not have to choose between medicine and food. And so your question asks whether we would accept per capita requirements or block grants or work requirements. That's what the right has been saying, to stand in the way and saying we can't afford this. We can't afford not to do it. 2.5 million people don't have access to a doctor in this state. We have to change that.
So Mark and Kelly have been following, I'm sure, a lively exchange conversation on Twitter, and I'm going to send it over to them. Mark, Kelly, take it away.
We certainly have, Craig, and we're heading, of course, into the second round of today's debate. We're hearing from the four leading Democrats in the race for governor. As you've been watching, you've seen this.
Indeed, lively, not only in studio, but online. You can join in the conversation as well by tweeting your thoughts and questions at Fox 13 News. Include the hashtag Fox 13 Debates. And here is our first question from Vance Key.
Well, let's take a look at this. Vance writes, Florida voters have become accustomed to politicians who will campaign one way and then govern another way. The people of Florida don't trust politicians anymore. What can you do to restore that trust?
Craig, that's a question on a lot of people's minds. We'll send it back to you for the candidate's response.
30 seconds each. This is not directed to a particular candidate, so we're going to start with Mr. King and work down the line. The question goes to credibility and trust. How do you restore it? And how are you different from the rest in that regard?
Because, Craig, I am the candidate that is the outsider with new ideas and fresh vision, who is willing to display the political courage that this state needs to get big things done. You know, I was the first candidate in a generation that said I will not take a dime from the sugar industry and I will not be beholden when it comes to our environment. That takes courage, and we're changing the debate when it comes to Florida's environment. From the first speech in this campaign, I said I'm going to work to ban assault weapons, and I have been consistent the whole time. I will stand up to the NRA. I will stand up to sugar.
Ms. Graham.
In Congress, I was rated the most independent member of the Florida delegation. And you know what that meant? It meant I didn't make my decisions based on politics. I made my decisions based on fact and what was going to be in the best interest of the people of Florida. And it's that commitment to independence, strong independence in making your decisions. I understand that people are fed up. They feel like politicians say one thing one place and they go around a corner and they say something else. To me, my commitment is to be an independent governor that is only waking up every day to fight for you and work for Floridians and bring you back the quality of life you deserve across this great state.
Mr. Levine?
Craig, we have a saying in business. That's where I started. I started from nothing and built companies, lived the American dream, became a two-term mayor. Forget about what people tell you. Look at what they've done. I've raised the minimum living wage in Miami Beach. I decriminalized marijuana. I fought climate change and got the highest medal from the president of France. I reformed a police department. I banned plastic bags. I actually did all these things and more. So every single thing I said I was going to do when I became mayor, I did it. And I actually ran out of things to do. And that's why I'm actually running for governor, to be quite honest with you, because I believe there's a lot we're going to do in Florida. And I say it this way, one more thing, Craig. I don't need to be governor. I want to be governor.
Mayor Gillen.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is fundamental. A lot of citizens, people I run into all over the state, just don't believe a lot of times that we're going to stand by what we say. And with due respect to the Congresswoman, it's kind of where we parted politically, is that we sent a Democrat to Congress to defend the president, to work with the Democrats to move a more progressive agenda for Americans. Her votes on everything from the Keystone Pipeline to the Syrian refugee vote, 54% of the time voting against Obama was not what I wanted out of my member of Congress. And I believe, as Mayor Levine said, you have to judge us by our actions. Look at my record and you'll see 15 years of public service. I've stood by what I've said I was going to do.
Very briefly, 10, 15 seconds, Ms. Graham.
Well, Craig, Mayor Gillen is just wrong. I voted with the president the vast majority of the time. And I'll tell you, the last time I saw the president was at the White House at the end of both of our terms. And President Obama, he put his hand on my shoulder and he said, Gwen, I am so proud of you. And I said, Mr. President, I am so proud of your presidency. So he is an example of what we need a lot more of in politics, which is you don't have to agree every single decision, in every single decision, to support and recognize that we're good leaders. And that's what I'll be for the state of Florida.
And you get the next question. It's on the topic of water quality, because the next governor of Florida will face a crisis in water quality to the north in Apalachicola Bay and to the south surrounding the Everglades. So I want you to tell me the one reason why you think you have more credibility than your rivals on this issue. Second part of the question, tell me which of your three rivals do you think has the least credibility on these challenges and leading them based on either their knowledge, their experience, their records.
Craig, I'm a really nice person. Don't put me in that position. But I will tell you that I know what needs to be done for water quality in this state. And it needs, we need to stop politicizing it. And you're right, we have a crisis, the Florida-Georgia water wars that have been going on for too long. We have a crisis in South Florida with Biscayne Bay and Florida Bay. So what we've got to do is we have got to put people who actually understand the science of water quality back on the water management districts all across the state and have them working together, because as we know, Florida, our water is all connected. I was just at a conference for the Everglades Trust. That's another key component. We have got to restore the Everglades. It is the beating heart of our environment. It is the determinant of water quality and water quantity. So my commitment to water quality is going to be to put scientists back in charge of making those decisions and restore the river of grass. And I'm not going to answer the other part.
Mr. Levine, will you answer? Why are you most credible and who do you think is least credible?
Craig, let me answer this. I can tell you that what's happening in Apalachicola Bay is important to us. We need to make sure we have the perfect right water for Florida. But we've been involved in a prolonged litigation. Over $50 million has been spent. I always learned that I'd rather have a mediocre settlement than a good lawsuit. I wish that money had been put in education. Now, we've got to reach a fair settlement with our neighbor to the north, Georgia, but water's crucial. As far as the Everglades, as the mayor of Miami Beach, we had to fight saltwater intrusion. We had to fight sea level rise. We had to make sure that we were doing the right thing. The Everglades, I believe one out of three people receive fresh water. We must maintain the Everglades.
Mr. King.
I stood up to sugar on day one. $60 million has been spent by the sugar industry over the last 20 years. It's been spent to buy politicians on both the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans. And it's affected the Everglades restoration and water standards. You know, this is about records. This is about courage. And I believe we can do so much more. You know, to your question of who is the least, I don't know who's the least, but I know that when you've taken sugar money, I know that when you voted against Obama-era clean water bills, as Congresswoman Graham has, those are just differences in record that I believe
okay.
a true progressive.
Mayor Gillum, a moment, Ms. Graham, chance to respond.
Oh, I seem to be the one. It's okay, when and the men. I am committed to doing what's right for water quality, and the bill that that Chris refers to was about regulations that we needed to understand what was being expected. I have taken the pledge not to take sugar money. I took the Now or Never Glades pledge, and I actually just recently provided a check to the Indian River Keeper in Martin County so they can use sugar money to clean up the mess that has been created by this governor.
Mayor Gillum.
Well, it isn't just about the men against the women. The records do matter. And in this case, the Congresswoman also voted for the Keystone Pipeline, which obviously can pose a sizable threat to groundwater. I also recognize today that the Congresswoman had to return some $16,000 to the sugar industry through her congressional campaign. That's important. These things matter. Records actually matter in this race. And I have to tell you, I agree with everything with regard to the Everglades and the southern flow of that water, but we've got algae blooms flowing out of the east and the west side of this state due to the nitrate levels corroding our water. We need to get lawmakers and lobbyists out of that process and put scientists back in charge.
Closing phases of the debate, I'm going to pare this down to 30 seconds each on state spending. Mr. Levine, give me an example of an initiative or a program in state government that you think is wasteful, abusive, or needs to be reduced or cut.
Well, that's an easy question, Craig, and that's going to be charter schools. I think we should not be investing in the competition. I think we should stop that cottage industry, stop these charter schools, and start investing in our public schools. It's like kind of like we own the post office. All of a sudden, you're going to invest in FedEx or UPS or DHL. I learned as a young man in business, you never invest in your competition. Invest in what you have, and we have the public schools. We need to invest in our public schools. That's wasteful, it's wrong, and we need to stop it.
What's your top priority, Mr. King, to cut?
Well, I think one of my top priorities just got recently passed. The fact that we spent tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars putting guns into classrooms and giving guns to educators to protect our students and our schools, I think that was wrong. I would be much more in favor of the type of initiatives that build the future dreams of our state, like my plan for free community college and trade school. That makes sense, and that's what grows our economy.
Mayor Gillen, first thing gets the axe in the administration review.
Well, I'll tell you, I know the governor has been real fan of the privatization agenda, but unfortunately that privatization agenda has come with very little oversight. No one's playing by the same set of rules. You now have lobbyists and special interests that are writing the rules and the guidelines. And so I actually think what Floridians want is a government that is responsive, that is efficient, that works obviously to address their everyday needs, not the needs of the well-heeled and the well-connected. We got to get the fox out of the hen house. And my city, we got rid of the small business registration fee, putting money back in the hands of small businesses. And when we can do that, I think we ought to. But we need to make sure we've got proper regulation on businesses that are running roughshod over this state
right now.
Looking
for a cut, Ms. Graham,
Let me first respond to Mayor Gillen on the Keystone issue, because Keystone was not about extracting oil out of the ground. It was about how you're going to transport that oil. And I had to make a tough decision. Neither decision was an easy one. But for Florida, every chance we have to reduce carbon emissions, we must take it. And the reality is, transporting by pipeline emits the least carbon emissions. As for which program I would cut that behemoth lottery agency that's developed. They're not spending the money as Floridians expected them to spend it. We don't need to have a big agency. We just need to send it into the budget so I can use it for public education.
Mr. King, you have state and city officials in Tampa and business leaders working on a plan trying to keep the Tampa Bay Rays in the state of Florida. If they failed to raise and find the money to do that, would you be supportive of state resources to subsidize a new stadium if it meant, as a last resort, keeping the Rays in Florida?
You know, I want to do everything in our power to keep the Rays in Florida. This is a team that this community loves and cares for, and I would work with innovation and creativity to do just that.
And tax money?
But Craig, I am skeptical. I am skeptical when we spend millions and millions and sometimes hundreds of millions of dollars to build stadiums for multi-billion dollar franchises. You know, in my community in Orlando, the Orlando City Soccer, that's incredibly well respected, privately financed their own stadium. It's beautiful. It came in on budget, and it's doing wonderfully well. And I would want to look for ways to keep the Rays here, but do it without spending public tax dollars, if at all possible, because those dollars are desperately needed for schools, roads, and bridges.
Mayor Gillen, any state money on the table?
No, I think I would applaud the Rays for looking diligently on how it is that they stay here in our state. We want to keep them here. But I tell you, when it comes to spending the limited resources of this state, we got to make sure that we do things like pay teachers a salary where they're not working minimum wage and moonlighting and retail shops to make ends meet. That we invest in the kind of public transportation system like the high-speed rail that Governor Rick Scott refused to take the federal money down that could have, quite frankly, connected St. Pete across to Tampa and over to Orlando, growing the economic development potential of this region by leaps and bounds. It was a mistake not to do that.
Ms. Graham, any state support?
I grew up in South Florida, in Miami, when the Miami Dolphins went undefeated, and I know how important it is to have sport teams in our communities. There's things that bring us together. So we've been using Enterprise Florida, Visit Florida dollars for other reasons. Let's use them to keep our sports teams here. Let's use them to create that community feeling that sports brings all across the state of Florida. Another component is we must bring the film industry back to Florida. We need to be using the Enterprise Florida dollars, the Visit Florida dollars, to bring the film industry back. Bloodline, for those of you who watched it, Bloodline stopped filming because they weren't getting support from the state of Florida. We're going to bring that back, and I'm going to have that office right in my governor's office because that's how important it is to me.
So we just found a sharp difference. Which side do you line up on, Mr. Lee?
Craig, it's a pretty clear answer. These are private businesses. I mean, I love the Rays. I think they're fantastic. I hope they stay here. Love the Dolphins. I love the Marlins. Why would we want to invest in someone else's business? Last time I looked, the state of Florida doesn't own the Rays, doesn't own the Dolphins, doesn't own the Marlins. So absolutely not. We're not going to invest in someone else's business. I wish them all the luck. I really hope they stay here. And by the way, Gwen, I agree, Bloodline was something that should have stayed. My future brother-in-law was the main star.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Enrique Marciano, and we should have more of them staying here. And I agree with you 100%. We're going to bring back the film and TV industry to Florida.
Next question, Mayor Gillum, it's marijuana. First, Florida is getting sued, of course, for banning the use of smoked marijuana for patients. What beyond force of personality could or would you do that would be different from the rest that could get the legislature to change its position on that? Second part of that question, though, do you also support a path to legalization for the recreational use of marijuana?
I do, and I think I'm the only candidate in the Democratic primary that does. The overcriminalization of our young people, of communities of color, off of the use of a plant. While I respect the laws that currently exist on the books, I believe that Colorado provides a great example of how you can grow a state's economy, have a clean industry, make sure that you meet and attend to the medical needs of individuals whose lives and their quality of lives have been improved by getting access to medical marijuana as part solution. On the recreational side as well, we've got to be in this prison industrial complex that is being built, again, all around a plant and a seed that, quite frankly, provides much more redemptive use than it does harmful.
Ms. Graham?
The medical marijuana issue is just one more, unfortunately, one more example of where the state of Florida has ignored the wills of the people. So whether it's the lottery dollars or Florida Forever dollars to protect our pristine land and waters, whether it's making the big sugar polluters pay, or now whether it's medical marijuana, I will make sure that we're working to make the will of the Florida voters in getting in place a full medical marijuana opportunity. It is the right thing to do. I'm a mom. I don't want anyone to suffer pain. So if you can substitute medical marijuana for opioids, we're on the right path, and I will fight to get it done.
And no in recreational marijuana.
I believe we have got to get the medical marijuana firmly implemented and having everyone take advantage of it, and then we can talk about further steps.
Mr. Lean.
Craig, I believe I'm the only one up here. It's actually decriminalized marijuana. So that was the first step for us in Miami Beach, because as Mayor Gillum rightfully pointed out, we do not want to ruin people's lives, their careers, their opportunities to join the armed services or go to university. So we did it in Miami Beach. My belief is this: medical marijuana, immediately. I cannot believe it's taken this long. And in regard to recreational marijuana, my feeling is this: if the people of Florida vote in a referendum that they want it and I'm the governor, I will carry it forth immediately, and we will use that tremendous revenue and tax revenue to fund education going forward.
Mr. King.
Craig, this is just another example of how conventional politics and our one-party state government in Tallahassee has failed us and not listened to the voters. You say you want medical marijuana. We don't give it to you. You say you want to end partisan gerrymandering and vote in fair districts. We don't give it to you. You say you want to fund environmental conservation. We don't give it to you. This is why we need a Democratic governor. I will work to implement medical marijuana because I think this is what the voters want, and this would be a step forward in Florida.
Ms. Graham, you get the next question. It's on wages across the state, because Governor Scott has focused on adding jobs and luring companies, but Democrats have contended that he aimed low, that he attracted low-paying jobs with fewer benefits. So tell me what you would do differently. And I'm looking for specific initiatives, whether it's changes to labor law, earned sick time, whether it's changes to job incentives. Get into the dirt for me. What are you going to do?
Well, Governor Scott hit his mark. He did hit low. When I hear Governor Scott say jobs, 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 I hear, yes, in the state of Florida, you're going to have to work multiple jobs just to get by. So we must raise the minimum wage. We must provide paid sick leave. And we must provide more opportunities in the state of Florida for those good paying jobs. And that's about technical training. I'm going to bring technical training down into the middle schools. In Congress, I sponsored a bill that was called the Middle Step Act to bring that training so that we can get kids excited about that great job. I want the jobs that are here today to be providing the workforce that they need. And I want the jobs that are going to come here in the future to have that skilled workforce. The next Amazon that comes to the state of Florida, they're going to not just look at Florida as an opportunity, they're going to want to be in Florida because we're the best state to relocate in.
Mr. Levine?
Craig, it's pretty simple. I call it the circle and the Lion King, the magic circle of life. This is what you have to do. You have to invest in education, invest in health care, have the best transportation, and literally and make sure you have the best environmental policy, have the number one greatest non-discrimination laws in the country, make sure you have equal pay for equal work. If you create these policies, which are very similar to the HR manual of those great companies we want to come, like Amazon and eBay and Apple and Lockheed and Boeing, then they will come. That's what we have to do.
Mr. King.
I want to give you one very specific policy that I would bring to the state of Florida, and that's free community college and trade school. A big, bold, progressive idea modeled after the state of Tennessee and designed to lift wages in the state of Florida. Let me give you one personal difference with Governor Scott. Labor. Working families and labor would have a seat at my table. And that's why they, the federal employees of the state of Florida, AFGE, tens of thousands of employees chose me, the first time candidate, because they know I'm committed to fighting for working families.
Mayor Gillum?
Well, I'm pleased to hear all of these ideas. They all cost. And I'm the only candidate on this stage running for governor who has talked about how it is you pay for it. And we're going to do that with the contributions on the corporate tax rate. Those corporations that got $6.3 billion through the Trump tax scam, a windfall. Only 3% of corporations pay the corporate tax rate in this state. And what we've said is that they've got to share in creating the kind of state that more corporations want to choose to come to, more businesses want to choose to grow in. We do that by making sure we've got good transportation, good and affordable housing, making sure that if they come here, their employees' kids can go to public schools that are high-class, world-class, rather than going into their own pockets to pay for private school education. We're going to do that, and we've got a plan to get there.
Mr. Levine, I want to get your thoughts on Democratic leadership in Tallahassee. Everybody has an opinion on Nancy Pelosi, who is the House Minority Leader in Congress. How would you score the performance of the outgoing House Minority Leader in the Florida legislature on a scale of 1 to 10 and the Minority Leader's biggest accomplishment?
Well, I could tell you this. It's not easy being a minority anything, especially being in Tallahassee today. It's hard to get anything done. You have a partisan Republican Party up there that wants to take control from the local community. They want to make sure that they control everything out of Tallahassee. They want to preempt everything from your minimum living wage to your right to regulate gun safety laws to even your ability to use private beaches. So being a minority anything is very, very challenging. So my belief is that we're going to change it. We're going to make sure we elect some Democrats. But I said it, Craig, and I'll say it before. If I'm honored to be governor, I'm going to work with everybody. You know, I've said it, it's a purple state. And the way you make purple is you mix red and blue. And my message is an economic message. And I believe, as President Kennedy said, a rising tide lifts all ships, as long as everybody has a ship and is on board a ship. So I believe that's what we will do going forward.
I was looking for, do you know who the outgoing House Minority Leader is?
Yep, McKean. Yep. McGee. Yep.
Janet Cruz.
It's Janet Cruz.
Oh, Janet, yep.
Janet Cruz. Mr. King, how would you assess her?
No, I would assess Janet Cruz and then Keone, who's taking over. You know, they have a challenge, right? Because they are in the super minority in the House, in the Senate, and of course, the Republicans have controlled the governor's mansion for now almost 20 years. You know, that's the challenge of the next Democratic governor, because you're dropping us into hostile territory. And you're saying, we need you not only to be successful, but we need you to lift a new generation of leaders. That's what gets me excited. I would love that opportunity to change the future of the Democratic Party.
Mayor Gillum, anything she could have done differently?
Well, I'll tell you, this is why this race for governor is so important. The next governor of the state of Florida will either sign into law or veto the next set of redistricting maps. We now have a situation in this state where elected officials are choosing their voters rather than their voters choosing the elected officials. That has meant the turning of the keys of this state and of the keys of government over to lobbyists who have been there longer, who know more about the system, who are, quite frankly, lined in the pockets of those elected officials up there. Janet Cruz and obviously Keone have a difficult job. Brainin and obviously the great Senator Gibson out of Jacksonville, difficult job, but they'll never be able to do it unless we flip this legislative process and make sure that we've got people who are representative voices of the people in Tallahassee.
Ms. Graham, your biggest accomplishment, what would you say it is?
I would say it's just staying in the fight. Staying in the fight for the people of Florida, because our voices, the voices of Democrats, have been silenced often. And Representative Cruz was always there, always communicating, working with the opposite party, because that's what's required. And that's what I did in Congress. Building those relationships, building those friendships that allow you to get things done, even in the minority. So when I'm governor, I'm looking forward to having all of the legislators around a big table. But let me make sure they understand this. You're going to work with me on the priorities that have been set during my campaign for the people of Florida. And if you don't work with me, I will veto every single one of your special projects until we get back to the table. Because this is about the people of Florida again. The people of Florida are going to be in charge.
And time is running very short. I'm going to call an audible here. 20 seconds each. Tax loopholes. You have the single sales factor apportionment, which does not appear to create any new jobs. You have the urban high crime zone tax credit that the sponsor says has been rife with abuse. What specific loopholes have you identified that you think are problematic that you would strive to close?
Well, you know, we have a corporate tax in this state that so many of our businesses aren't paying. We have large corporations all across Florida, and so many of...
Well, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to play the last few seconds of this debate. That was Chris King, the Orlando-based businessman. We've been listening to the Democratic debate that was on WTVT television yesterday. You can find this entire debate on their website and on their YouTube channel. The other candidates in that debate... Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine, former Miami Beach Mayor Philip Levine, Tallahassee Mayor Andrew Gillum, and former U.S. Congresswoman Gwen Graham. If you want to comment about this debate and tell us what you think, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment about the debate on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back about the debate again tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Coming up next, Mitch Perry will be here with the Midpoint program. First, the latest news from NPR. Remember, you can see that entire debate on the WTVT website. This is WMNF Tampa 88.5.